You're listening to Two Sides of FI, a podcast that follows two lifelong friends as they seek financial independence and to retire early. I'm Eric, and I'm joined by my friend Jason, who reached FI in 2020. And this is our story.
It sure has been a while since we've both been on the show at the same time, right?
I feel like we say this, we've said this for the past like five episodes that we've recorded.
Did we?
Yeah, kind of. We've taken a bunch of breaks because, it just hasn't been that consistent. So, no, it's good to see you again, man. We both have had some big changes since last we spoke, right?
For sure, yeah. And I guess people are well aware of your changes. Got pretty good response to that episode about Laura giving notice.
Yep. Yeah, that's been exciting. We've had an interesting couple of weeks. We recorded actually a follow-up episode just this past weekend because I wanted to make sure it was fresh in Laura's mind about all the reactions that she got giving notice. Yeah. You probably recall this, but she notified her boss first, and then she notified her lab and various people in between, and she had to kind of run around. And, you know, once you give notice like that, it kind of, the word leaks, it just spreads like wildfire. So she had to do a little bit of damage control. She's like, oh, I forgot to tell this person or I forgot to tell that person. So we just recorded this episode where we recapped all that and we talked about some of the responses she got. I was kind of shocked at some of them, so I'm excited to share that one.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to that too. I mean, I saw some of the comments and some of the ways you responded, but I'm sure there's a whole lot more I didn't.
Yep, for sure. So what's going on in your life?
It's only been a few days since I got back from my trip to hike the Camino Portugués. So just about 3 weeks I was away in total, including travel to go to Portugal and then hike from Porto up to Santiago, Spain, and then fly home. So, 175 miles over that 2 weeks. It was quite an experience, learned a lot about myself and what it's like to do that kind of trip, met some cool people. And some of that I've shared on this channel. All of it I kind of wrote about on the blog, but look forward to talking to you about that. It was a really important trip for me.
Yeah, it was. I know you were looking forward to it. I'm excited to kind of dig into what it meant for you and if it actually lived up to the expectations. Do you feel like you're really living the FIRE life for real now, finally?
I think so. I think one of the biggest kind of one of the aspects of this trip that really resonated with me the most was that not only could I, did I have the freedom to travel when I wanted to? Obviously, we still have family constraints and considerations, but there was no, getting time off from work or am I limited to, these days or whatever. But really, I could do the trip in the way I wanted. And so, when I talked to lots of people along the way who were doing this Camino or who had done other Caminos in the past, a lot of them have time constraints, especially Americans, to say, I've got this 10-day period or this 7-day period. I'm going to make that work. And for a trip like this, that might mean just basically you're walking. Or you're only walking. You wake up, you walk, you go to bed, and you repeat. And I met somebody like that on my trip. They were 8 days in, and they were almost done, whereas the rest of us were somewhere between 11 and 13 days to do the whole thing. And like for me, having that freedom effectively was the difference between doing this trip and not doing this trip.
Yep.
I just wouldn't have tried to make it work because as soon as it feels like this is a chore or this is like I have to somehow cram this in, like that's not going to sound attractive. And that's about me. That's not about anybody else. But I don't know. That's reality. Like I was able to do this trip because I am retired.
Yeah, we just got back from St. John recently. We take a trip down there every winter and we felt really time constrained by the end of it. We're running around trying to do this and that, and we still couldn't fit all the things we wanted into that vacation because it's a week's vacation, but you got a travel day on each end. So it's 5 days. And by the time you just get unwound a little bit, it's time to think about checking back in and returning the rental car. Yes. And like doing the dance to get back home. And it's not easy to get down there.
Right.
Especially in the winter when you have travel delays or whatever. And then to get, you got to reverse it and do the same thing just a few days later. So I am really looking forward to that date in the future. In fact, we booked our vacation for next year, double the length that we normally would. We've never, ever taken a 2-week vacation. And, now we have more freedom to do that. And we're making different plans now. I'm excited by that prospect.
Yeah. I look forward to hearing how different you think it was. comparing that to your typical experience, not just about the total time, but how you might have even approached the trip.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, twice as expensive.
Yay. That's the good part.
But I mean, you get to amortize the travel costs over 2 weeks rather than one. And honestly, you know, like what you're doing is if you're not putting bounds on either end of it, you get to spread that cost over a much wider range. And, you know, in fact, we've gotten a lot of responses to some of the recent videos that we posted about, you know, living abroad and traveling abroad. The slow travel is super appealing because it effectively reduces those, you know, one-time costs of getting there and getting back home.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when you think about the types of trips we're talking about, that as a percentage, that plane travel, especially in the current environment, is such a large percentage. Yeah. So it definitely feels a lot better spreading that out over time. The total value of the trip just increases, and that's how I feel about it.
Yeah. So now I'm kind of curious about, so this trip that you were planning to do, the Camino.
Yep.
You didn't end up going with your wife. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's a good question to ask. It's the right one. And, you know, I will say, on this trip, I met a whole bunch of other people, and I had the opportunity to talk to a few couples who were there together, and then other people who were in marriages or long-term relationships, but who were there on their own. So it was interesting to me to compare notes. For me, Lori and I do most of our travel together, and you know, it's amazing having that built-in support system, especially when you're doing something really challenging, you know, whether it's strenuous or just kind of like, you know, you're in a new environment and you have each other to help kind of navigate the scene.
Yep.
So, you know, is definitely the preferred way to travel for both of us. But, you know, for me, this trip was something I wanted to do by myself because I knew the sort of inward journey was the thing I was craving as much, if not more, than the outward journey. So, you know, I can do long walks, and I wanted to try, you know, 2 weeks as opposed to a few days, which is what I had done previously, you know, kind of straight, and, you know, at this stage in my life. So it was more about kind of having the time by myself to think. You know, I mostly walked alone. If I met up with people, it was tended to be in the evenings or, you know, along the way, but not walking. And so it was really a key decision and one that we really had to think and talk through about this trip because, you know, it was unusual. But in talking to other people, I found that, you know, this was not a novel idea, this idea that this is something I need to do myself because I'm, you know, looking for these things. I want the time to think. I want to, you know, kind of have that walking meditation. Whereas if you're hiking with somebody, whether it's a good friend or a loved one, you're probably going to be talking a lot of the time. I'm not saying all the time, but, you know, it's just different. And it was interesting to compare experiences with people and watching how couples interacted and how people who were on their own interacted, because both are beneficial, but I think they have different sort of pluses and minuses.
So was she okay with you wanting to do this solo, or was there some pushback?
Yeah. So I would say, I don't think there were any concerns from like a safety and well-being standpoint, like me going on my own doing this trip. You know, you're not so far from civilization. Cell phones work really well almost everywhere. I've got a Garmin inReach if I was ever somewhere and needed help and wasn't within cell phone range. So I don't think that was a concern. It was more, you know, yeah, I'm taking time away from the family to go do this thing on my own. And that is unusual. In fact, that's something we've never done. I mean, sure, we've done short trips away from each other. I've gone up to Portland to visit friends or maybe come out to see you or something like that. But typically we're traveling together. And so, you know, it required a lot of thought and time to talk about why it was important to me. I viewed this trip and still do view this trip very much as a part of my focus on just overall wellness and particularly on positive mental health. And so it's something I had talked about in therapy. It's something, an idea that I brought home. And sure, at first the reaction wasn't like glowing support, but it's something we talked through and worked through like couples do. And in the end, you know, I wouldn't say I had the family's blessing, but I had their understanding to why I wanted to go. And
So you feel like that put more pressure on you to get like wring every last little bit out of it?
I don't think that's true. At least I don't recall ever finding myself thinking that, but you know, I may have thought early on, especially like, oh, I hope this proves to be as important as I think it is, because that's certainly the case I made. You know, this was a trip where I couldn't necessarily pin it down why I thought this was important at this kind of juncture in my life. But as I've spent time really focusing on, you know, what makes me happy, what, you know, in this phase of life I'm excited about and where I'm challenged and what kind of growth I'm trying to have, I just kept coming back to this idea of I need to spend some dedicated time by myself kind of in this kind of experience, you know, with my thoughts. And so I'm sure I thought early on, like, boy, if I come out of this with nothing other than like, hey, that was an interesting walk, that's not a great outcome. But it was far from that. It really, I think, delivered in all the ways I might have hoped.
Oh, okay. So what was the transformation? Because as an outsider looking in, I look at this and I say, it's not something I would choose to do. I mean, you talked about the kind of call of the Camino, and I know, yeah. I think other people have phrased it like that. And I've heard a bunch of people on Fire Podcast talk about the Camino. And I look at that and I go, I'm not sure. Like, it doesn't interest me in the same way.
Yeah, sure.
And so tell me, like, what is it about this for you that was kind of calling to you? Because I think other people are kind of thinking like I am, like they don't understand it.
It's hard to pin down. And I think at a high level, it came down to a feeling I got when I read people's experiences. And I read sort of endless journals, a few different books, of kind of what people set out to do, and then what they got out of the trip. And often it's, you know, people at, you know, a stage in their life where they're not sure what's next, or they've gone through some big change and, you know, are processing that. And I met a lot of people on the Camino like that too. But they sort of, you know, most people come out with answers and ideas. And, you know, I had been thinking about a longer through hike for years now, and we've talked about it too. But I also know that that is a very different experience, right? I've done some backpacking. That's very different, especially if you start talking about months of time. And that's not something I'm willing to take. I'm not interested in doing on my own. That doesn't sound attractive at all. But what the Camino does provide is a framework that I think is very easy to work within. Lodging isn't difficult. Food isn't difficult. So really what you're left with is carrying the things you need to exist otherwise, you know, your clothing, your toiletries, you know, first aid, etc., and just walking. And so depending on which Camino you do, you could be talking about as little as a week, you could be talking about as long as 6 weeks or even more. And it just provides, I think, unlike many other long walks and treks that are out there, and there certainly are more than a handful in Europe alone, it's an easy way. Like, the barrier to entry is pretty low, but you can still have a very profound experience walking in that kind of environment. And so I just found that attractive, as others have, and it seemed a good fit. And so I looked for alternatives in the U.S., as well, and just didn't find anything that was as well put together in terms of infrastructure and the like as some of the more popular Camino de Santiago's.
Hey, Eric here with Two Sides of Fi. If you've been listening to Jason and I on the podcast, you may not be aware that we also have a YouTube channel. And quite often, we have supporting graphics, charts, information, and even a few outtakes that don't fit well in an audio format. So if you're into that kind of thing, you can find us on YouTube at Two Sides of Fi.
I had a few realizations, and you know, I took notes every day, and I tried to document those as best as I could to be cognizant of them and not lose anything that I gained. And I blogged about all of that. And all of those, by the way, are linked at twosidesoffi.com/Camino if anyone is interested in that. But I also know that I need to take some time now and probably, you know, kind of more holistically look at those. But if I had to pin it down now, things I got out of it: one, really forced focus on the present right? What's happening, mindfulness. And that was a goal. It's something I've been working on anyway. It's something with how I'm wired, I've been pretty bad at for a long time. I'm easily distracted. I'm just the worst at, you know, I'll couch it positively and say I'm really good at multitasking, but that just means I enjoy being distracted, if I'm being honest. But being forced to focus and sort of reminding myself as I go to focus on the present, I think I left with a much more profound appreciation for that. The other idea that I went in the Camino with was just being open to the experience, right? Things are going to get thrown at me. I deal poorly with unexpected change. That's something I've known for years. And, you know, adverse conditions are going to happen, especially in the winter heading into spring. You're going to run into bad weather in this part of Portugal and Spain. And I did. But I think I learned a lot more about, you know, just taking stuff as it comes, you know, and just saying, so what? Right. And that was kind of the operative phrase of a couple of days of this trip, where I encountered things I didn't anticipate. I had sciatica flare up, something I've never had before. I had really bad rain. I got sick. And, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to choose. Do you keep going or do you bail out? And besides that, you can't really change that. And so that sounds like a trivial thing, but I'm somebody who, I think, as you would agree, I'm pretty bad at, you know, dealing with the little bumps in the road that can happen in life. And so for me, I was pretty pleased that I was cognizant of doing better with that stuff. And I was really happy about that. And then I think the last thing, maybe pretty simple, is, you know, no matter how difficult like something seems, and lots of things in life are very difficult, you know, often these things are, they're mental. And, you know, there were times where I felt challenged by what was happening and all these things that I just mentioned kind of coming together at once. And, you know, I think I did a pretty good job of realizing that, you know what, you can cope with that stuff. You can take a break, you can move on. It's going to get better in most cases. And, you know, it ties into dealing with adversity. But, you know, I don't think any of those three things sound profound to anybody listening to this. But for me, I think those were really positive steps. And while it's stuff I'd been talking about and, you know, learning about in therapy and in my own kind of mindfulness practice, they all really came together for me in this, being thrown into this totally different environment. So I think those are the biggest outcomes. Maybe lastly, if I can throw in one more, it's this idea that the relationships we have are the most important things in life. Maybe obvious, but, you know, the people you meet, the conversations you have, the relationships you have with your family, the people you know, that's what you miss. You know, I didn't miss anything else about being at home. Sure, your own bed is nice, but that wasn't what I found myself, you know, needing after being away for a week, 2 weeks, up till 3 weeks. It was the people. And, you know, that was, I'd never traveled so long on my own. And it was, you know, kind of a really deep realization of something I've felt before, but, you know, in a, I don't know, a more profound way.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I get a lot of those things just from travel. And one of the things that I love about travel is being able to share it with someone. So like a sure, solo thing is less appealing to me, but I can see from a meditative standpoint that, you know, it might be important to do that. I think I remember reading a few blog posts where you're like, oh, this person's walking with me, but I'd rather have some solo time. So it's kind of interesting that you would say it's also relationships, but you were trying to, you know, maybe kind of carve out your own personal time within this.
Yeah. Well, I think the balance I found is I didn't have any need to form like a trail family who walked together and were like constant. You know, I met people on the third or fourth day that I stayed in touch with the entire time. And we would cross paths, we would see each other and agree to meet up for dinner or what have you. And for me, that was enough. Like, I enjoyed being with my thoughts for most of the day. And then in the evening, sharing those with somebody and talking about what we experienced, like that to me was like a perfect balance. It's not to say I don't love travel with other people. I really do. I get so much out of it. But I viewed this as this was not a trip. It wasn't a vacation. I viewed this as something different. And so the personal part, the being alone part, to me was really important.
How was Portugal, man? I saw some of your photos and I was it was different than what I expected. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I think Portugal is, you know, and I've been in the south before, so I've seen Lisbon and some of the surrounding area. I've been down to the coast. This is my first time spending a bunch of time in the north. I love Porto. I could definitely see that being a really exciting place to live. I don't know what the breakdown is in, you know, expats who choose to live there versus the very large community that I know is in Lisbon. But the north is also much more mixed. You know, there was some kind of, I didn't understand it the way it was explained to me by a tour guide that I was speaking to, but there was some kind of perverse tax incentives where people that owned multiple properties let one go fallow and they got tax benefits on their primary residence. So you have a lot of abandoned houses. Some of these in cities have been turned into Airbnbs now, but in the surroundings, you end up with a lot of cool relics that just end up on Reddit, on abandoned porn. But that was a little odd to me. But the people were super warm. The food is great. If you like seafood, you're in business. But yeah, like I said, I think Porto for sure. I could see myself like being happy there. Some of the surrounding areas, it's like maybe not so much access to stuff. Doesn't seem like as kind of the experience we're looking for. You know, I would say one of the things that I came back and found myself thinking, and Lori and I actually talked about in the last couple of days, was I increasingly am of the mindset that long, slow travel sounds great and spending a lot of time abroad sounds great, but I don't think we're going to be expats. How about you and Laura? Is it still an option or where are you?
No, we've talked about this before a little bit, but you know, our parents are at a stage where becoming expats is not that appealing right now. So we have to be kind of closer to home, but yeah, slow travel and, you know, longer duration stuff is interesting to me. A couple of people pointed out some YouTube channels that of people who are retired early and doing this that are very similar in age to us. And I think Brian and Carrie is one of them. And that looks pretty appealing to me. I don't know. I could do it full time.
Yeah.
Like they appear to be doing, but, some of that's, and for all the reasons that you stated, like that some of the transformations that you had, during your Camino, you know, those are appealing to me, having new experiences, you know, getting yourself out of the comfort zone. You know, we kind of run the same circle all the time, you know, back and forth to work projects and, you know, answering to others. And now it's time to kind of explore and stretch your legs a little bit. So, you know, that part of travel has always been appealing to me.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things we find ourselves talking about now is what is travel going to look like? Yeah. What kind of experiences do we want? Because, you know, originally when Lori and I were talking, doing something like the Camino Frances, which is the long one, the 800 kilometer one, was pretty interesting to both of us. But, you know, coming back, talking together, I think she really led the way in the conversation. Like, I'm not really sure that sounds like something I'm super excited about at this point. Like, walking and hiking is wonderful and I love them. And maybe going between areas that are super interesting, like that's a fun, healthy, and convenient way to do it. But like, just going for the sake mostly of going, if the places along the way aren't super interesting,
yeah,
that's not compelling.
Yeah.
And, you know, I found myself agreeing with that idea.
Okay, yeah, me too, man. When you say that, I'm like, okay, that rings the same bell that I have. When I saw that, I was like, you know, and I do think it's maybe one of the criticisms of that trail in that you have to, you know, some of the walks that you were doing are pretty long in between areas. And I don't know how many rest stops there are. And I know the different trails have different durations and lengths. But, you know, some of the criticisms I've read about it are like, hey, this is kind of a forced march. And like, I don't find that personally appealing. And I know there's a part of you that kind of rejects that in terms of hiking. But you know, the destination is super important to me, actually.
Yeah.
And wanting to be in a place that I want to be in. And so, yeah, I think she hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, there are plenty of beautiful walks around the world. But I think it's also about, like, how are you using your time? Yeah. Like, for some people, spending a month just walking through beautiful, you know, vistas and staying places along the way might be sufficient. But, you know, we're finding ourselves thinking like, well, how many, you know, it's kind of like thinking through that little diagram of the how many trips you have remaining or however many whatevers you have remaining. And it's like, well, how many trips do we have? You know, this idea of like how many active trips do we have before we're, say, 65 or 70? How many do we have total? Like, how do we want to spend those? And, you know, not overthinking that, but being realistic about, well, if we're going to take this chunk of time, how are we going to spend it?
Yep.
And making sure that that makes sense.
I'll tell you the hardest thing that we're having, and Laura and I are planning a ton of travel this year. And that's been a fun exercise for us, you know, kind of when we're having coffee in the morning. It's like, okay, what does this trip look like? And we have a bunch of stuff coming up in the next couple of months here. And so that's been exciting. But the hardest thing for us has been figuring out what we're going to do with the existing house behind me here. Like, what's going to happen with the cat? And you guys have a bunch of pets to contend with. We only have one cat who's aging. But, you know, how does that work? Are we going to rent this out? Are we going to do a home exchange? And I don't have a good answer for that yet. And I keep kicking the can down the road, but the like January is fast approaching here.
Yeah, we also are kicking that can down the road presently. I mean, there's a lot of options, and we've sort of dabbled in each of them. Like, okay, I've got this much knowledge about home exchange now. I know what the availability is in our area, so I know there's an attraction to it, so that's a possibility, but haven't really taken it any further than that. Short-term rental isn't an option in our area. That's legislated, basically. So, we've got great coverage for, you know, shorter trips, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, no problem.
Right.
But longer than that, it's a different ball game. So yeah, we also haven't solved it. I would love to hear from anybody who might be watching this or listening to this, who has ideas. Let us know in the comments.
Yeah. I mean, we basically built a budget that doesn't require us to rent this out. I think you did.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, could make it easier. It could open up other options, like home exchange is one that it could open up different options, which is kind of cool. But so many complications. I just look at my wood stove and I look at how we keep our house and I'm like, oh, do I trust this to somebody else? You know, is it going to feel good to me, like, long term?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Admittedly, you're not exactly the person I think of when I think about home exchange.
No,
and that's
that?
Well, I don't know. I just think, like you say, you have your place your way and you want it to be taken care of. And I just wonder if you'd be okay letting, I mean, even with all the vetting, like, it's still, you don't know.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of vetting. There's really good review structure on the biggest home exchange site. And you have so many opportunities to say no, but you still don't know. And I guess that's the same with any kind of renting, right? And maybe the vetting's higher on a home exchange, just because there's a certain type of person that's doing that, and, you know, you have more interaction with them than, say, you might with a future tenant. I don't know.
I'm gonna let you do it first, man.
Oh, okay, sure. Sounds great.
I know there's a lot of anecdotal evidence out there saying it works, but oh man, definitely makes me concerned. But.
Yeah, we still probably have a kind of a built-in buffer before we have to make any big decisions, because, you know, with the first year of college coming up, it's like, well, we're not really going to go that far right away. Yeah. Right. You know, so who knows?
Hey, Eric here with Two Sides of Fi, checking in with a quick request. Jason and I love making this show and sharing our conversations, but we need your help spreading the word. The best way to do that is to give us a quick rating and review on your podcast app of choice. And if you know someone on the Fi path, please hit that share button on your favorite episode. Every little bit helps. Thanks.
I think it's like anything in retirement. Like, these things seem like obstacles until you finally solve them, and then they're nothing. It's like all the pre-fire people who, rightfully to an extent, overanalyze their safe withdrawal rate or even earlier are like agonizing over small stock market moves. Like, at some point, each of those things is behind you.
Yeah.
But there's always something else. that you're ready to worry about. And so that's just the next one.
It's definitely a tractable problem, but it is. I haven't solved it yet. So, yeah, it's interesting.
So what else is going on? You know, I think last we left things with the business. You know, you were thinking through all sorts of possibilities and Laura's involvement, and you know, you've touched on that a little bit, but any new evolution there?
Yeah, we're she's starting to attend meetings. With this group that I'm working with, and we are together deciding what the reason for that is, because together we're deciding what it's going to look like. And I want her to be a part of that. I extended the invite to her just to say, if you want to play a role in this, this is the opportunity. And so we're trying to really make some changes within the structure of my relationship with this company that's helping me, that sets it up to be more automated. So we're trying to just be more intentional about putting our kind of RE life first. And it'll be nice to see how that evolves, because right now it's busy. It's busier than I'd like to see continue into the RE phase. And yeah, certainly that's how Laura has expressed that to me as well. She's like, we don't want to design ourselves another job, because it could be that. And so, yeah, that's been a positive evolution. We've gotten a lot of feedback from viewers and other people about how this is so wrong for us and we shouldn't do it. So,
seen some of that.
That's been interesting.
What would you say to them?
It's a personal decision that we're making together. Yeah. We've been married now coming on 24 years, and we make decisions out of mutual respect for one another. And it is our decision to make. It is no one else's. And the judgment, it doesn't feel great. You know, it doesn't feel great to hear how everyone thinks you're making the wrong decision. But the fact is, it's our decision to make. And the moment that it becomes a point of contention between us, the decision's already made. And I think we're both in agreement there. It's like, we'll shut the business down. And so, yeah, that's how we make decisions. So it's part of the reality of putting yourself out there in public.
Yeah.
You know this, right?
I do.
You subject yourself to all kinds of criticism, and some of that can be hard to hear. And I think if there's any kind of crack of doubt in your own personal plan, those criticisms can kind of, you know, they can add to it. They can add to the rift. And so it makes it hard to make a decision that's truly just for the two of us. And so this is kind of the first time she's really been confronting that. She's, you know, heard a lot of things, obviously, when she made her announcement at work. She's received a lot of feedback from people telling her why it's such a bad idea and how she's an awful person and she needs to keep contributing. And, you know, those things are hard to hear, and it's hard to see the comments come in. And I think for a long time, you know, when I was building out my YouTube channel, she would be the kind of moderator of comments and things and just say, hey, look, you know, just ignore it. It's just a random person on the internet. But now, being on the receiving end of that, she knows what that feels like. It doesn't feel good.
No.
It's one of the side effects of practicing in public, and we've kind of signed on to that here. And I don't know. It may temper her involvement in the future in the channel, but we'll just have to see.
Yeah, it's you make a lot of valid points there, and a lot of keyboard warriors out there have no thought or no care as to how their ramblings are received. And you know, an awful lot of them don't seem like trolls. They're just, you know,
having
whatever.
Fun. They're just having
whatever,
fun. You know,
guys, gals.
One of the things that we did while you were on your trip, we agreed to run this experiment where we post some of your vlogs on the channel and and things like that. And I saw a pretty interesting change in you that I don't know if it was attribute it to the trip or therapy or a combination of different things, but I saw you being more honest and open. And I know you decided to stop running that experiment for your own reasons and not post any more videos there. But I did see growth there that I just wanted to kind of say, I thought that was cool that you were, I felt like you're being more honest and open. And I really appreciated that, because sometimes, you know, you and I can have personal conversations that are off camera and I say to you, dude, why didn't you share that? Like,
yeah.
And you just, you know, you weren't ready, or you don't feel like you want to share that. And
yeah.
I just wanted to say it publicly that I thought it was cool that you were putting yourself out there like that.
I appreciate that. Vulnerability is tough. Some of it for the reasons that you just mentioned, it's judgment.
Yeah.
Some of that is just our ego getting in the way and protecting us from being, exposing ourselves, right, as anything less than perfect, something I have to deal with and I'm learning a lot about how to deal with. But yeah, you're right. It is an intentional thing to try to be more open, honest, and vulnerable and not seem like I have everything solved, because like most people, I don't have everything solved. And I'm going to misstep and have challenges I didn't foresee, or I'm going to take a decision that isn't the best one I could have taken. But you're going to learn from it and be stronger. So I appreciate the acknowledgement, and hopefully you continue to see such great behavior.
Yeah, and I was going to say, we're both in similar spots in that our kids are now getting ready to head off to college, right? Has that decision been made in your house?
Decision has been made, and
okay.
The first small amounts of money have been plunked down as housing deposits, and starting to hear back on, roommate finders and all that stuff. So exciting times here. How about for you?
Yeah, we have a bunch of visits. So our youngest ended up applying to many more schools probably than he should have. And the acceptances are starting to kind of roll in. And now May 1st is kind of the cutoff point. And so he didn't want to do a lot of upfront visiting of schools until he knew he was in and knew financially what they were going to offer. So I was kind of proud of him for making that decision, but now we are squeezing in all the trips that we probably should have done last fall into a 3-week period coming up here. Oof. Starting, on, you know, his spring break. That's going to be happening in a few weeks here. So it's going to be a whirlwind of travel, visiting different places. I'm super excited about this, man. It fills me with like extreme joy to be able to go and watch him step into this next phase of his life. I just love watching it happen. I loved it with my oldest, and I got so excited just seeing these things kind of roll in. So I don't know, maybe as a parent, you kind of live vicariously through your kids and their future actions, and it's just exciting. It's exciting times for both of us, you know. And
yeah, no, I won't let you write it off as just that. It is, it's excitement. it's nice to see and experience. I mean, even just this morning, you know, I got CC'd on something that said like, you have a message in the housing portal.
Uh-huh.
So when he got up this morning, I was like, hey, make sure you check the housing portal. There's something going on. It's just exciting, these little things. And, you know, just there's another step taken, another box ticked. And, you know, before they set out on their next stage, and it probably helps that you've gone through it once already, that some of the anxiety is lessened, but it doesn't change the excitement.
Yeah. And it's a chance to just spreadsheet it all out, man. I'll tell you that the math of this whole thing is just somewhat ludicrous.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that.
Yeah, it is. There's really nothing more to say. Cost of college.
What are you doing with your 529s these days? Have you changed investments on things?
Yeah, I can't remember if we talked about this on air or off air, but basically I'd kind of divided it up into a few different tranches earlier this year. Basically put a chunk of it in money markets to cover year one. Years two and three are in more of a like somebody who's been retired for a while's kind of distribution. And year four is still rolling pretty hot in stocks. And that seemed like a fine plan to me. I was pretty happy with that. Lori agreed with the idea, and so that's where we're at.
Can I have excess?
I mean, that'll be fine because we like to take college classes too.
I was going
to
say.
You know, we change the beneficiary if he's done with using those funds, and we're still kicking, taking classes. Maybe I'll be in Spanish 8 by then.
We're definitely not going to – we won't have any excess. That's for sure.
No, you're in a little different situation with respect to the costs of schools that your boys have considered or are in now.
Yeah, man. I'm excited to see what the next phase brings. So we're going to know in about another month what the final decision is. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Very cool. Well, yeah. I wish you guys well with all of it.
Yeah, thanks, man. You came back with a cold.
I don't know. I had some kind of cold, and that seemingly went away, but my lungs haven't recovered or something. I don't know what's up with that.
Yeah, it doesn't sound
between
good,
that man. And only being able to eat bananas, toast, applesauce, and rice, you know, I really could be in a better place right now physically.
God.
Mentally, I feel great. But, you know, sometimes you just enjoy the cuisine in a certain area and you come home with a little extra surprise. And, well, that's where I'm at.
What was the best thing you ate there?
Man, I try really hard not to eat octopus, but they're so known for it in Portugal on the coast that I had some, and it was wonderful. It was really quite good. It was one of the best dishes I had.
Pulpo?
And it was just so simple, just made properly.
Yeah. Was it pulpo? Is that what they call it?
Yeah. Yes, they do. It was great.
Okay.
But really the best part of it is the value priced high quality €5 and €6 a bottle wine.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
That didn't suck. So people going to Portugal for that, I get it.
Yeah. I was drinking the cheap rum. The rum which is cheaper than water in the Virgin Islands, so.
Yes, that is always a good move. It's best to mix it with something. If you're just drinking rum sitting on the beach, that day goes a very different direction.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Not doing that.
Did you catch on my blog that I met a Two Sides of Fi connection on the Camino?
I did. Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, German fire community members, right? Who knew?
Did they recognize you?
No. So it's funny. So the wife of the couple, Britta, we start talking about fire. She brought it up after I said I was retired, and it turned out her husband, Marcus, was already a listener to the podcast, and she didn't know that until she, you know, had texted him or called him or something, and he was like, "Oh no, send a picture." So that was really kind of fun.
Nice.
Not and very surprising. The fire community in Germany is not known to be large. She made that very clear, and so it was just cool.
And you were immediately like, "Don't talk to me."
No,
I'm meditating. Leave me alone.
I was not. I didn't. At least to my knowledge, I didn't do that.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Of course.
Yeah. I never had to tell somebody I'm gonna walk alone. You just kind of leave me here. Like it never happened. Like it was. Things just worked out great.
Okay. Yeah. You just ran ahead.
No. I just did my thing.
You lagged behind. Fell in a river.
I never fell in a river. I did intentionally walk in a river once in this part where the trail was just really, really flooded. It turned out I could have gone around that, but I got the memo a little late. But everybody else walked around, and that was good for them.
All right, man. Well, it was good catching up with you.
Likewise. It was really good. And excited to hear that update with you and Laura. That's going to be coming up soon.
Yeah. 10-4. See ya.
Best wishes to you both and to your son and all that college rigmarole.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Be well.
Join us as the conversation continues next time on Two Sides of Fi. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider rating it at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. For show notes, resources, and links to the video version, please check out our website at twosidesoffi.com.